foreigners will abandon the dollar. This is a process that has been underway now for quite some time, and it's all part of the death process of the fiat currency, which is still currently the world's reserve currency. But these are all symptoms of the dying dollar. Boy, what it's done is fractured the world, because the money's dying. The money's bad. When you have bad money, you have dishonest commerce. And when you have dishonest commerce, you have friction in the world. The friction is almost exclusively with countries that are doing trade in other than dollars. It's the common element.
Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today we have a returning guest, Rob Kirby. Rob is from Kirby Analytics, and I am very happy to have him back on the X22 Report Spotlight. Rob, welcome back to the Spotlight.
Pleasure to be with you again, Dave.
Hey, thanks for being here, Rob. Let's start off with what is happening out in the economy with the Fed. They're raising interest rates. We've seen the LIBOR rate. It's continually rising. If we look at the 3-month, we see it's gone from like 1.17 in May of 2017 all the way up to 2.32 in April. And as this continually moves up, how is this going to affect the economy? How is this going to affect housing? How is this going to affect what the central bank does next?
I would say to you, Dave, if the powers that be are determined to continue raising rates, they have a desire to implode the economy. And I don't think that they're going to maintain their recent course of action raising rates, because I honestly believe that the powers that be are afraid that if they collapse the economy, that civil unrest could ensue, and a dangerous situation could become a lot more dangerous. So my personal view is that we are much, much more likely to see a Fed doing an about face in the very near future and lowering rates rather than continuing to raise them. That's my own personal opinion on this. And I do believe that long-term rates, as expressed by the 10-year bond, I've been saying this for quite some time now. I feel that the long-term rates have more or less topped out, and I just don't think we're going to see them rise materially from here. And I'm not saying we couldn't go from 3 to 3.10 or 3.15, but I would suggest to you that a 10-year rate at 4% is completely off the table, at least to me right now, unless the powers that be decide to collapse the system on Trump and blame him. But ultimately, I don't think that the system is because I think at the end of the day, I believe that the U.S. military has Trump's back, and the U.S. military is not going to allow the financial elites to pull the plug on the economy and destroy it. So I would look for the Fed to be lowering rates. The next material move in interest rates, I believe, will be down, not up. That's my thinking.
You're saying that you think they're going to be lowering it. I mean, do you think we're going to be heading towards the negative territory like out in Europe?
I believe we will ultimately see negative interest rates being inflicted by the Fed Treasury complex. Yes.
So do you think they're doing this? And you're talking about the central banking establishment where they can, you know, bring rates up and bring them down. Are they doing this because they don't have their person in office? Let's say Clinton was elected and she was president. Do you think they would have no problem in crashing the economy in that scenario?
Well, Dave, I think it goes deeper than that. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with Clinton or a Bush or Obama or anything. What we're talking about And ultimately, what underlies this is the life cycle of fiat money. And the life cycle of fiat money predicates that the amount of money in existence when you have compound interest, usury with compound interest, dictates that the supply of money must grow at a very predictable rate for a very long period of time. But in this life cycle, and this is math, this is not emotion. And a person who's explained this very well is Chris Martinson. And if you Google Chris Martinson and you go to his website and you go through a little tutorial called the Crash Course. And what the Crash Course, produced by Chris Martinson, what it explains very succinctly is that money, fiat money, in its life cycle grows at a very predictable, even rate for a certain period of time, but then it inflects, the growth rate of money inflects and it goes vertical. We're on the vertical part of the curve now. And money must be created at an infinite pace. And what that means is that each marginal unit of money that's created when it's in its vertical growth phase is worth less than the last one created. And what this ends in is what Austrian economists refer to as a crack-up boom or hyperinflation. And you can't produce anything in increasingly infinite amounts and have the marginal value of the next unit be worth more. And you see what that does is it takes a deflationary collapse off the table because the money is growing at a vertical rate. And you know what governments have been doing to us, Dave, is they've been trying to hide and disguise the debasement of money. And they're telling us that our economy's getting better, but it really isn't. And the way we can show this and explain this to people who don't get it is we can just look at marginal wages median income in America. Look at median income over the last 10 years in America. Median income's gone from $50,000 a year in 2007 to $59,000 in 2017. And that's an increase of $9,000 in median income over the last 10 years. And that increase of $9,000 is very representative of official U.S. government inflation data, which tells us inflation's running around 1.5% a year. But the interesting thing to take note of is $50,000 10 years ago bought 23,000 pounds of ground beef. But $59,000 today buys only 17,000 pounds of ground beef. You see, and while geez, Rob, you're using just one item. There's an infinite number of items we could put in this model besides ground beef. But what it's showing and what it demonstrates is the debasement of money. And it means that more money is buying less. And that is very consistent with what the crash course explains in the life cycle of fiat money. More money is being created. Infinite amounts of money are being created, and yet the dollars are buying less. That is monetary debasement, and that is symptomatic of an emerging crack-up boom, which is what the Austrian economists have long said is the way fiat regimes end. And you know what? And this fiat regime will ultimately be no different than other fiat regimes in history, because they all end this way. It's like we know the life cycle for humans. humans are born and they live more or less somewhere between, on average, they live, 70 to 80 years of age. Some outliers, some people make it to age 100 or 110, but there's nobody on the planet that's 200 years old. At least nobody I've met. I don't think I've ever known anyone that lived to 150. Well, fiat money has a life cycle like humans have a life cycle, and fiat money regimes die, just like people die. And our fiat money regime is in the process of dying right now. And there are some people who would even suggest to you that it's in the intensive care unit right now. So that's where we are, and that's where we're headed. And it doesn't really matter how much money they create. This is the path we're on, and they have to continue creating this money. And oh, and by the way, the little hook to add into this discussion is that when you increase interest rates, it dies quicker. So if you think that the system, you see, the people in the U.S. Treasury and the people at the Federal Reserve and the people at the Bank for International Settlements, they know all this. So if you think they're going to hasten their own demise, then keep banking on higher interest rates. But you know what? Most parasites, if they're informed, don't try to kill the host. At least not quickly. So these people that control the money are parasites on humanity. And they've been feeding off humanity, and they've inflicted their fiat money regime on us. But they're not ignorant. They're actually very clever, and the extent of their cleverness is explained and is demonstrated in the way that they present economic data to us. They tell us we're doing better, but our dollars are buying less. Well, that's a lie, because we're not doing better, and our dollars are buying less, and our living standards are decreasing, not increasing. So that's reality.
So if they don't raise interest rates and they start to drop interest rates, like we said in the beginning here, and they decide, okay, let's not crash the economy, won't eventually, like you said, from Austrian economics with the crack boom cycle, won't the economy die by itself then?
Well, I think what's likely to happen, because we've been witnessing it for a number of years already, is that foreigners will abandon the dollar. But we've been seeing a lot of this over the last two or three years, where countries have been making, particularly in the Asian world, countries are making bilateral trade agreements where they conduct their trade in other than dollars, for everything from oil to agricultural to commodities. This is a process that has been underway now for quite some time, and it's all part of the death process of the fiat currency, which is still currently the world's reserve currency. But these are all symptoms of the dying dollar. And what it's done to the world is fractured the world, because the money's dying. The money's bad. When you have bad money, you have dishonest commerce, and when you have dishonest commerce, you have friction in the world. And boy, look at the world today. Look at the friction. Look at the global hotspots. There's more of them today than there has been at any point in time, probably in the last 60 or 70 years. And what's the common element? Like all the countries where we're seeing friction, the friction is almost exclusively with countries that are doing trade in other than dollars. It's the common element. I mean, Iran is doing business in other than dollars. Russia is doing business in other than dollars. China is doing business in other than dollars. Venezuela is doing business in other than dollars. You know, the leader was deposed because he was selling oil in euros. Libya was destroyed because Gaddafi wanted to create a gold-backed currency, which is trade in other than dollars. And if you want to become an enemy of the United States of America, all you need to do is say you want to do business in other than dollars. And any country that suggests they're going to do that quickly gets on the enemy list. And their leader becomes very ripe for being deposed or for a civil war. So pay attention to what's going on around you. And then, I don't know, from my standpoint anyway, to me, everything goes back to the money. Everything is about money. Follow the money. And when the money's bad, you have problems. And people are leaving the dollar because the people, the stewardship of the world's reserve currency, the people who've been given this responsibility have not acted in a prudent way. And they've squandered this this responsibility, this privilege granted. Has been squandered in the name of nation building and other unthinkable things. And it's the old notion that absolute power absolutely corrupts, and it certainly has done so in the Western world through the vestiges of the dollar as the world's reserve currency.
Wouldn't it be a good thing if this system, and again, this system is a central bank system. It was designed by central banks. This is not We the People system. They loan governments, you know, currency with interest attached, and we the people, we're enslaved to this and we have to pay it back. Wouldn't it be a good thing that if all the countries, they move away from the dollar and the system just breaks down and collapses?
Ultimately, I think, Dave, that's exactly what's going to happen. But you know, what happens to America and the West as this is happening? I mean, the dollar is failing. The dollar will continue to fail. That is etched in stone. That's, you know, and to suggest otherwise is like saying you're going to live till you're 200 years old. And you know what, Dave? Nobody listening to this broadcast is going to live to see 200. And it's a dog that doesn't hunt. It won't happen. So, you know, we have so much time. We're allotted a certain amount of time to be on this planet, and fiat currency regimes are allotted a certain amount of time. And we can argue about what the end date is. And frankly, arguing about the end date of a fiat money regime, in my view anyway, it's moot. Because the important factor is it will end. And it's a sure thing as a human life will end. So, you know, so then to me, the real challenge or the real issue is how do I, especially if you're thinking in terms of intergenerational preservation of wealth, or a legacy to leave your kids, you know, how do you position yourself best to weather the death of money? Historically, people have invested in real stuff, whether it's a family farm, whether it's real estate holdings, or whether it's precious metal or fine art. These are things that historically, tangible real stuff, has historically survived the demise of fiat money. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that tangible stuff will survive the death of this fiat money regime as well. because history is a pretty good reminder as to what will happen in the future. So anyway, that's why I am an advocate, have been for a very long time, of holding physical precious metal. Because physical precious metal, it doesn't owe anyone anything. If you don't have it in your possession, for the most part, you don't own it, which is why you don't want to have it stored with a third party, which is why you don't want to own mining shares, because when money dies, usually governments fall, or governments find their finances in absolutely disastrous states. And when governments need to refund or re-energize their finances, they harvest it from the people, because governments tax people and confiscate wealth from people to gain their sustenance. That's what they do. So, you know, mining shares, owning mining shares, people say classically you have leverage to metal price, to the price of metal. Well, you do, as long as governments are functioning properly. But you look at what happens. Look at what happens to mining concessions or to companies that operate in jurisdictions where political fortunes fail. Mining companies are subject to having their licenses revoked or confiscated, or new taxes being put on, or royalties, and in such an example, the leverage that you imagined you had in the mining shares can disappear very quickly. And that's why owning physical metal, as opposed to the leveraged instrument being the equity, sometimes the physical can pay off very, very handsomely. So
when the dollar dies, as it's dying right now, we know that China and Russia, they've been purchasing a huge amount of gold. And here in the United States, we had Mnuchin go into the vaults and show us gold. I mean, doesn't the U.S. have enough gold to weather the storm?
Well, my personal view on Steve Mnuchin's visit to Fort Knox is that it was a publicity stunt. There was no audit of gold performed at Fort Knox. And what Mr. Mnuchin said, his public utterance when he went to Fort Knox, he said gold is safe. Well, Dave, I would agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Mnuchin that gold is safe. Gold is the safest form of money on the planet. But Mr. Mnuchin did not perform an audit. The U.S. government has not performed a credible audit on the gold that they possess to own, which is slightly over 8,000 metric tons. There's been no credible audit of this gold, despite Showboat Mnuchin's utterances. There's been no credible audit done on U.S. sovereign gold since the Eisenhower administration. End of story. So until there's a credible audit produced, I would not assume that America owns the gold that they say they own. And that's end of story. And you are right. China, Russia, and other Asian countries have been accumulating physical metal at a voracious pace now for the last 20 years. And my view is that when the dollar actually dies, we will see a new gold-backed, or let's just say asset-backed currency will be launched, in my view, by the Asians and possibly China in conjunction with Russia. And it might not be purely gold-backed. It might be a basket of things that back it, like gold, silver, possibly an energy component like crude oil, and maybe even something from the agri complex. But I do believe that the next world reserve currency will be asset backed. And I do believe that physical precious metal will figure prominently in the asset mix. And if people want to say that's a return to a gold standard, you're welcome to say whatever you want. But that's where we're headed.
I mean, it definitely looks that way, because if you really look at what China and Russia, what they've been doing, I mean, they introduced the petro yuan. It's like, you know, the petro dollar. They have gold holdings. They've created exchange systems like here in the United States. They created a payment system just like here in the United States. They're setting up the One Belt, One Road system for trade. They're having bilateral trades all around the world. I mean, if you really look at it, they duplicated everything that was here and they have it out there now. And
they have it. Not only do they have it out there, Dave, they've created a complete global parallel structure to what we have in the West, and it all can operate without dollars. Period. So, you know, people would be doing themselves a favor if they're trying to think this through. China has not been accumulating U.S. debt now for at least 2 years, and America continues to not only have, you know, the existing debt, but America is spending at least another creating new mountains to the tune of an extra trillion a year, every year, on top of the existing 20 or 21 trillion, whatever it is now. You know, the new debt created this year by America will be $1.2 trillion, I believe, is what's budgeted, and it could end up being bigger. And so historically, China has been America's biggest creditor and has taken down the lion's, or let's just say, a disproportionate amount of new debt issuance, but they haven't been buying. So ask yourself, who is buying the debt? Who is buying the U.S. government bonds that are being issued? And of course, like we talked pre-interview where I made the comment to you that America is the only country in the world that issues debt that has never had a failed bond auction. Well, you know, that still continues, and America continues to auction debt, and it appears, at least, that no amount of debt America wishes to issue ever produces a failed auction, and it seems anyway that the demand for this debt is unlimited. And I ask the question over and over and over again, and nobody can give me good answers about who's buying the debt. And my guess and suspicion has long been the money that's being used to purchase the debt is in large part a part of this missing $21 trillion that was documented by Dr. Mark Skidmore and his research team at Michigan State University, where in two government departments, namely the Department of Defense and HUD, Housing and Urban Development, from the years 1996 to 2015, government documents show that there's $21 trillion that is unaccounted for, which is an insane amount of money. And to me, that is money that's been created. Well, we know it's been created because, you know, it's flown through the books of the military and HUD, so we know the money was created. And my personal opinion is that the money was fraudulently created. It's been siloed. It's in slush funds like the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is an adjunct to the U.S. Treasury, which is a black box that is subject to no oversight, doesn't publish financials, and it's just a dark hole. But it's a dark hole that contains, at least in my view, dramatic amounts of capital that have been created falsely, criminally, or whatever. But bear in mind that anything the Exchange Stabilization Fund does is deemed to be an issue of national security, and as such, nobody's allowed to. And everything they do is also, by definition, classified. So nobody in the U.S. government is going to be telling stories about what the Exchange Stabilization Fund is really up to, because doing so would make you about as welcome as Edward Snowden. And, you know, that's just something nobody in America is going to willingly do. But suffice to say, we know the money's been created. And we're talking tens of trillions of dollars, and I call this dark money. And this dark money is basically available to the monetary elites. These are resources that they can marshal up at any time of their choosing to do things like make sure U.S. government bond auctions always appear to be well bid. This insane amount of money can also be used to juice stock markets and make the stock markets look like they're, you know, very well supported and very well bid. They can be used to, these resources can be used to sell down other currencies to make them look weak relative to the U.S. dollar. You know, they're used, look, they're used for a host, this dark money is used for a host of purposes. You know, everything from regime change to toppling foreign economies, funding people who are opponents of enemies of the state. You know, it's a real black box. So this is the nature of the world we live in today. And listen, what I speak of may seem to some people as being a stretch. And to anybody who holds that view, all I ask you to do is turn on CNN and listen to it if you can bear for 5 minutes, and listen to the lies, and listen to the vitriol. Listen to the likes of James Clapper saying that nobody in America has ever been surveilled, and that the U.S. intelligence community is not surveilling anyone, when we have overwhelming evidence that they've surveilled Trump and his associates in the run up to the election in 2016, I think it's becoming pretty much accepted common knowledge now that you know, surveillance on American citizens has been an ongoing practice now for a very long time. And listen to the lies in the media, listen to the vitriol in the media, listen to elected and non-elected heads of the intelligence community, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the CIA, whether it's the National Intelligence Agency. These people are lying to Congress. They've perjured themselves all over the place. So when you look at just the evidences of officialdom lying about their activity, you know, the notion of what they've done to the money becomes a lot more believable if you can accept anything that's extremely well documented.
So this dark pool of money, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, this is like their own little budget within government for, you know, black op operations around the world, not just with the economy.
It's a criminal slush fund. Call it what it really is. You know, the nefarious activities that the Exchange Stabilization Fund has been involved in over the years is astounding. And anybody wants to get up the curve on what the Exchange Stabilization Fund is all about, there's a great resource and a reference on that. Go to a website called marketskeptics.com. Look in the right-hand margin where a chap by the name of Eric DeCarbonell has produced a YouTube series on the ESF, Exchange Stabilization Fund, and it's under the headline, Something I've Been Afraid to Blog About, which is in the right-hand margin of the homepage of marketskeptics.com. I would advise everybody to watch and rewatch that YouTube series on what the Exchange Stabilization Fund is, how it was created, and what it's all about.
Rob, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. How can people see your work?
You can catch me on the web at kirbyanalytics.com. And Dave, it's been a pleasure talking to you once again.
Yes, thank you for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Have a good day, Dave.